They're running Spanish Airlines now. Why? From here. Here, hopefully, it's getting enough business.
Okay, this week's Parsha is Parsha's Bay, page 340. First pasuk. Vayimer Hashem al Moshe. Hashem said to Moshe, "Bay al Paroi, come to Paroi, ki ani echvadati aslibo v'slev avadav, for I have hardened his heart and the heart of his servants. L'ma'an shisiyos esay ela b'kirbay, in order to place my signs, these of my signs, in his midst. U'l'ma'an tisaper b'znei vincha v'mincha, and so that you should tell into the ears of your son and your grandson, Eis asher hisalalti b'mitzrayim, that which I made mockery or made sport of Egypt, v'eis asher sam tivam, and my signs that I have placed amongst them, v'datem k'ni Hashem, and you shall know that I am Hashem." So this pasuk tells us that part of the purpose of the plagues was in order to tell our children or our grandchildren how Hashem made a mockery of Egypt. And that has to be understood in light of the fact that Egypt was the most powerful country at the time. And Hashem made a mockery of that most powerful country. That most powerful country that was enslaving the Jewish people, Hashem made a mockery of it. And that has to be told, the pasuk says, to your children, your grandchildren. It has to be told to them about the mockery that I made of Egypt. That although Egypt was the most powerful country and it enslaved you, Hashem made a mockery of it. And this is really part of the lesson of Yitzhak Mitzrayim. The same way Hashem tells that first generation what it needs to pass on to its children and grandchildren about the fact that Hashem made a mockery of Egypt, that Hashem is the one who is the ultimate power, and there is no ultimate power beyond him, that is something that Hashem told that generation to tell their children and grandchildren, and it really is part of the whole story of Yitzhak Mitzrayim that is related from for all generations. For all generations, we have to learn from Mitzrayim the lesson that as much as we seem helpless and as much as we seem at the mercy of powers that seem beyond control and beyond conquerability, that there's no such thing. There's no such thing when it comes to Hashem. That the Ribbono Shel Olam is the ultimate power. And when he decides that it's time for us to be redeemed and it's time for us to be helped, there is nothing that stands in his way. And not only that, he'll make a mockery out of that which appears to be that power that we think is invulnerable. Okay. So Moshe and Aaron approach Paro, and again they warn Paro about the locust. And Paro's servants say to him, you know, we've got to do something about this. This is getting out of hand. Moshe and Aaron are brought back. They're asked who's going. Moshe says, we're all going. Everybody's going. Now, take a look on page 342, Pasuk Yud. So after Moshe responds that everybody's going, Vayomer Alehem, Paro said to them, Yichen Hashem Imachem, Hashem shall be with you, Kasher Ashalach Etzchem Estapchem, as I will send you and your children. Re'u Ki Ra'a Neged Pneichem, see that there is evil opposite your faces. See that there is evil opposite you. Which, the Targum, the Unkelus, explains it to mean that the evil intent that you have is going to come is opposite you, meaning your evil intent of trying to get everybody out, you know, I'm not being fooled, I'm catching you on it. Now Rashi on Pasuk Yud, which is in the right column, second line from the top,
brings at this point he suspected that they weren't really just going to the job, and they actually wanted to get out completely.
Right, because there's no need to take everybody for that in his mind.
Right.
So Rashi brings down a medrash agadah shamati. Rashi brings down a medrash. Kleichav echad yesh sheshmai ra. There is one star, and that star's name is Ra, evil. Omer lahem paray, paray said to them, Raya ani b'tzagdino shali. I see in my tzagdinos, I see through the stars. That star is going to greet you in the desert, and it's a sign of blood and killing. Meaning Parah is telling them, you should know, you know, you're planning on going out to the desert, and you're going to meet a lot of trouble there. When the Jewish people sinned, the sin of the golden calf, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to kill them for it, Amar Moshe b'tfilah, say, Moshe said in his tefillah, on behalf of the Jewish people, Lama yemru Mitzrayim leimar b'ra'ah hitziyam. Why should Mitzrayim be able to say, b'ra'ah hitziyam, he took them out with evil? Zuhi shamar lahem. Moshe Rabbeinu was saying to Hashem, this is exactly what Parah said to them. Ru kira neged p'neichem. Parah said, look, Ra is going to greet you in the desert. That's what it means. Why should Mitzrayim be able to say, b'ra'ah hitziyam, he took them out with evil. He took them out towards the star called evil. Miyad vayinachem Hashem al hara'ah. Immediately Hashem changed his mind regarding the evil. V'hafach es hadam, and he changed that sign of blood, l'dam mila, to the blood of mila, shemal Yeshua isam, that Yeshua eventually circumcised them. V'zehu shenemar, and this is what it means when the pasuk says, when Yeshua says, hayoyim galois yitzchar pas mitzrayim aleichem. Today I have removed the shame of Egypt from upon you. They said to them, "Dam anaroy aleichem amidbar." We see blood in your future in the desert, and the fulfillment of that was not what the intention of the Egyptians was, but rather the blood of Mila. Okay, so Rashi brings down this medrash, and the medrash is saying that Parah warned them. He sees in the stars, which was a way of being able to see the future, that there is this star that's going to greet you. It's called Ra, it's called evil. It's a sign of blood, and it's a sign that there is blood awaiting you in the desert. Rashi says, that's what Moshe Rabbeinu said, if Hashem is going to kill the Jewish people because of the sin of the golden calf, that's going to be the fulfillment of what Parah said. And therefore, Hashem relented. So the Mechtam Eliyahu asks the following question. Mechtam Eliyahu asks, how could the stars be able to talk about a future event of blood which actually depended on the choice of the Jewish people? You know, bottom line, we know there's the ultimate question that Hashem, if Hashem knows the future, how do we have free will? That's the ultimate question. But that's a question about Hashem. It's not a question about anything else. Everything else has to conform with the way the world works, which is that human beings have free will, and until free will happens, nothing is decreed. Nothing happens until we practice our free will. If so, Mechtamela asks, how could this star be a sign in the future of catastrophe for the Jewish people, which seemingly, from the way Rashi says, was a sign of the eventual sin of the Jewish people, and at the end it says Hashem turned it, Hashem turned the blood to the blood of Mila, of circumcision. Which, it seems that Mechtam Eliyahu understood this to mean, that in essence it really is a sign of catastrophe for the Jewish people. Seemingly it was a sign of catastrophe based on the sin of the golden calf, but once Hashem didn't kill the Jewish people because of the golden calf, he turned it into a sign of blood of Mila. But how could there even be this sign of the future of blood on the Jewish people for the sin of the golden calf, if the sin of the golden calf didn't happen yet, and it depends on their free will? So how could there be a sign for the future that seems to be talking about, that's based on free will, which hasn't been practiced yet? That's the question the Mechtam Eliyahu asks. And he answers in the following way. He answers that this sign of blood that Parah saw in the stars was not a sign of blood that was saying, oh, you know, this sign of blood is really a sign of blood dependent on the sin of the golden calf. That's not what it is. The sign of blood really is the fact that based on, let's call it the laws of nature, based on what naturally, on the natural sequence of events that should befall the Jewish people in the desert, there should be blood. They should not be able to survive. That's what Parah sees. And the Mechtam Eliyahu calls that the perception of Teva, the perception of nature. The perception of nature said that the Jewish people going into the desert is catastrophe. And that is what Pyre was saying. Based on the laws of nature, based on what nature holds, you should not be able to survive the desert. However, the Jewish people aren't bound to the stars. We know that when Hashem told Abraham that you're going to have children, Abraham says, but I see in the stars that I'm not going to have children. I can't have children. I naturally can't have children. And Hashem says to Abraham, say mitztagnim shalcha, go out from the stars. You don't belong in the stars. You're not bound by nature. You are beyond. You're above nature. And that is really the essence of what the Jewish people are. And the Mechnim Elio says this based on a medrash. I think it's a medrash or Gemara. Right, a medrash Mechilta. Lo'imitna Torah lidrash ela lo'ichlei haman. The Torah was only given to be studied, to be interpreted by those who ate the man. What is the meaning of that statement? The meaning of that statement is, says the Mechnim Elio, that we should not look. We should not say that the Torah was given in the desert because by default, so to speak. Couldn't be given in Egypt, because in Egypt they were on too low a level. And they needed to enter Eretz Yisrael with the Torah. And therefore, the place to give it was the desert. No, that's not how to look at it. The way to look at it is that the Torah has to be given to people who eat the man. Means it has to be given to people whose perception is not a perception of nature. Is not a perception of the parameters of the natural world. It's by people who eat the man. It's by people who live in a supernatural existence. It's by people who can look at the world in a supernatural way, who can look at the world and understand that the Jewish people are above the laws of nature, are above the limits of nature. The Torah has to be given to those people because the outlook of Torah has to be an outlook that goes beyond the limits of nature. So the Torah has to be given in the desert because in the desert they could only subsist on man in a miraculous way, and that would now give them the perception of Torah, which is a perception that says that the Jewish people's existence is beyond the limits of nature. Paro, when he said that he sees blood in the future of the Jewish people, meant to say nothing about the sin of the golden calf. It just meant to say that I see in the stars that in the desert there's nowhere for you to survive. There's no way. That doesn't deter the Jewish people because the Jewish people aren't bound by the limits of nature. However, once they did sin by the golden calf, at that point they actually fell from the higher level that they were of the Jewish people, that they live beyond the limits of nature. And at that point, they actually now fell within the confines and control of nature. And therefore, now at this point, they were at the mercy of the star called Ra, called evil, that star that's a sign of blood. Because now, no more would they be, now they were no more in that higher level of the Jewish people that's beyond the limits of nature. Now they fell down to be within the limits of nature. If so, the stars say, if the Jewish people are within the limits of nature in the desert, they're done. And that's what happened to them once they sinned in the golden calf. So Moshe says to Hashem, look, if you kill the Jewish people, it's going to be exactly what the Egyptians said. Therefore Hashem relented. And Hashem forgave the Jewish people. But even with forgiving the Jewish people, that wasn't enough. That wasn't enough to save them from the decree of nature. That wasn't enough to free them from the limits of nature that they now found themselves in. They actually needed something to counteract that. And the way to counteract that would be eventually with the mitzvah bris milah that they eventually do. But the whole point of this star was not that the star was saying inevitably they're going to sin, but rather to say that based on the limits of nature, the Jewish people in the desert should meet calamity. That, in essence, doesn't control the Jewish people because the Jewish people are above that. And that's why the Torah was given to those who ate the man, because the Torah cannot work within a people that have a perception that is limited to the confines of nature. It can only be given to people whose perception is higher than that. And when a Jew, and once the Jewish people have that perception and live by that perception, they are higher. They do live beyond the confines of nature. When the Jewish people sinned by the golden calf, they now fell back to a lower level within the confines, and now they were at the mercy of what lied in the stars, which is nature, which is that in the desert, they can't survive. Now, the Mechtam Eliyahu concludes that really this lesson is a lesson that is relevant to our lives constantly. Because if we perceive ourselves as limited within the confines of nature, we will be limited by the confines of nature. But if we see ourselves above that, which is truly our essence, that our essence is beyond the limits of nature, which is the essence of the Jewish people, then Hashem responds and we do live beyond the limits of nature, or beyond what would be the expected limits of nature. So for instance, and this is the Mechmer says, this manifests itself by people at every level they may be at. If your attitude is that I can't make a living and keep Shabbos, because if I don't work on Shabbos, I'm gonna lose money, and I'm not gonna be able to support my family, and I'm gonna lose my job. Well, then that means your perception is that you can only live within the limits of nature. But if you put your trust in Hashem and you know that the Jewish people live beyond those limits, and Hashem and Hashem controls the world and anything can happen, then you will see that you will be able to actually live your natural life. You'll be able to live, make a parnasa, to make a livelihood, and keep Shabbos, even though perhaps naturally the two things shouldn't go together. A person might think, how could I learn? If I learn, I'm not going to be able to do my work that I need to do. How am I going to do the work I need to do and learn at the same time? I don't have time for both. Okay, if that's your perception, if you limit your perception, you're going to be limited. But if you actually put yourself in the hands of the Ribbono Shel Olam, and you realize that in the hands of the Ribbono Shel Olam, with the merit of Torah and being the Jewish people, we can live beyond the limits, we can go beyond the limits of nature. This is what Hashem promised Abraham, and we put our trust in Hashem to that, then we will see that our lives will be lives that will be lived beyond what would be the expected limits of nature. So this whole discussion, Mechtam Eliyahu, was something that, again, took place as the Jewish people are leaving Egypt, this whole question of being limited by nature. And the lesson is that we're never limited by nature as long as our perception is one, is a perception of Torah, which is a perception that we live beyond the limits of the natural world. Okay. So the parasha continues with the plague of darkness and eventually the plague of the smiting of the firstborn. Now take a look on page 346. Which is right before the final plague. Hashem tells the Jewish people that they have to go to their neighbors and ask them for their gold and silver. And Pasuk Gimel reads, this is again page 346, Pasuk Gimel, Vayitein Hashem et Chenam b'nei Mitzrayim. And Hashem gave the favor of the nation in the eyes of Egypt. Gam ha'ish Moshe, also the man Moshe, Gadol ma'ayveret Mitzrayim, was very great. They were held in very high esteem in the land of Egypt, b'nei avnei paroi u'b'nei ha'am, in the eyes of the servants of paroi and in the eyes of the people. So it's interesting that when the Torah talks about Moshe being held in high esteem, it calls him ha'ish Moshe, also the man Moshe. Why is he called the man Moshe here when we're describing the high esteem that he was held in the eyes of the Egyptians? So the Mesher Chacham explains like this. Mesher Chacham explains that when you talk about a person held in high esteem in the eyes of people, especially in the eyes of people of those times, there were two possible ways of how people would evaluate you. You could be evaluated because people would recognize what kind of a special person you are, what kind of a person you are regarding your wisdom, how you live by your wisdom, how you treat others, how merciful you are, how much you respect other people. That's one way that people will respect you. They'll realize what kind of refined human being you are, what kind of a mensch you are, and they'll respect you for that. Another form of being respected was if it was some kind of a miracle worker, it was some kind of wonder man who made perform the miracles and perform supernatural acts, that also gave you a lot of respect in the eyes of people. Meshech Chachma says that the wonder worker, the wonder man, the person who pulls off all these wild acts, that person is the person who typically starts off being held in high esteem by the simple people. The simple people see this guy pulling off all these magic tricks and all these wonderful things and all these miracles, and they're very impressed with that. Okay, the people on a higher level, the people on a maybe more educated level, on a more sophisticated level, people on a level that their value system is based on something more real than just on things that are impressive. You know, that person, they're not the ones who start off being so impressed by that person. The common folk are, and at a certain point of time when the common folk get really worked up into this person, because he may have started off doing one miracle, and within a day he's probably done about a million miracles in their eyes, and he's just a superstar. So the people on a higher level, the scholars, whatever you want to call them, the people in the more sophisticated people, let's call them, they'll eventually get caught up in it also. They're going to say, well, you know, this guy can't be nothing if people are so impressed with him, and eventually they'll fall in line also and consider this person great. If the person is great, greatness is based on their character and what kind of a person they are, the common folk don't necessarily know how to appreciate that. But the more sophisticated, more educated, will actually recognize that person. They'll recognize what kind of a special person he is. And actually, that person's esteem will start in the A's of those in the higher class, and that will eventually work its way down to the lower class when they see how the higher class holds this person in high esteem. So therefore, the Meshech Chachma says like this. Moshe Rabbeinu clearly was seen by people as a miracle worker, because he brought all these plagues. Whatever he did, he made a lot of unbelievable things happen in front of the eyes of the Egyptians, and therefore the Egyptians clearly held the simple folk, the common folk, clearly held Moshe Rabbeinu in very high esteem because of the miracles that they saw him performing. We know that when it comes to the Pharaoh's servants, who the Meshech Chachma's sermons were people that were more sophisticated on a higher level, clearly they weren't so impressed with Moshe right away. They considered him magicians just like them. You know, you're bringing black magic to Egypt, you know, you're bringing straw to a silo, that's I think the Medrash says. I mean, that wasn't going to impress them. They figured he was a magician like them, or maybe he had some kind of powers that they weren't aware of. But they weren't going to be overly impressed by Moshe Rabbeinu until eventually they have to admit and say, "Espel Akimi, there's something going on here more than just some kind of a miracle man. There's a lot more going on here." But when it came to Moshe's being that miracle worker kind of person, that was something that they weren't impressed with right away. But says the Meshech Chachma, when it comes to Moshe Rabbeinu's menschlichkeit, when it comes, let me read you the wording that the way he says it. V'hanagasei hativis, chachmasei v'anvesanusei, v'chomideisei v'chayshetetevesulasei. But when it comes to his natural behavior, his wisdom, his humility, his character traits, chayshetetevesulasei, how much he cares for the benefit of others, Rachman v'chavagyayna v'pulaysav, merciful in his thoughts and his actions, Arki kol mevin shira'u v'spainin by Omar, until anybody that had the ability to understand and appreciate that saw him and contemplated him, Omar, kizeh Moshe ha'ish amiti, Moshe is the true man, u'mibaladoi enroi ha'adam likari ish, and no one else should be called the man in comparison to him, because in comparison to him, everybody's like an animal. No one is as refined. No one is such a great human being like Moshe Rabbeinu. So from the point of these people who know how to appreciate Moshe for the kind of person that he was, they appreciated him for that. They didn't necessarily appreciate him for the miracles that he was doing, but for the mensch that he was, for the person that he was, that they clearly did. Therefore, the Meshech Chachma says that's what the pasuk means when it says Gam Ha'ish Moshe, the man Moshe. When it came to Moshe as a man, not Moshe as the person who is performing the miracles, but the man, but Moshe the man, Gadol Me'od Be'eretz Mitzrayim, was very great in the land of Egypt. Be'enei Avdei Paray. The Torah first mentions the servants of Paro, because Moshe's Meshlechkeit was appreciated first in the eyes of Paro's servants. Those who were more sophisticated, those who were on a higher level, Ubeinei Ha'am, and following them was the eyes of the people. So the point of the Pasuk, says the Meshech Chachma, by calling Moshe Ha'ish, is because here the Pasuk is trying to stress that Moshe's esteem as a person is what we're talking about here. As a mensch, that's what we're talking about here, and that was first in the eyes of the servants of Paro, that was first appreciated by the more sophisticated people, and that trickled down, so to speak, to the common folk. Now, this is very interesting, that the way the Meshech Chachma talks about how they saw Moshe. They saw him in his behavior, his wisdom, his humility, his caring for others, how all his thoughts are full of mercy in his actions. So at the same time that he's bringing all this trouble to the Egyptians, clearly he's not bringing mercy upon the Egyptians, they still recognize he's a mensch, which is a very interesting thing. You could be the kind of person that somehow or another you're the agent to bring destruction and death upon the Egyptians, and the same people recognize, but you know what? He's a mensch. Because they recognize that when he's doing this, he's not gloating over it, he's not enjoying it, he's not laughing at anybody for it. He does it, as he says, they recognize his humility. He recognizes Moshe Rabbeinu is not doing this for himself. It's not about him. It's not about his leadership. It's not about his power. It's all about being an agent of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And therefore, none of this contradicts the obvious nature of Moshe Rabbeinu as a caring and giving person. That the Egyptians themselves recognized. They recognized his menschlichkeit. They recognized that Moshe Rabbeinu did everything as an agent of Hashem. All the punishment, all the destruction, all the calamity he brings upon the Egyptians, he does it merely as a servant of Hashem, but as a person it's clear how much of a mensch that he is. That's just an unbelievable thought.
He always warns them. He's not just saying,
he's warning. It's Hashem.
He gives an opportunity. He always says it so he shall recognize the power of Hashem.
Okay.
He never says it to show you what a great guy I am.
That's true. 100%.
Yeah.
100%. But if you think about it, it would be hard to think that people would appreciate that, But again, it's Moshe Rabbeinu. It's like the menschlichkeit pours out,
right.
And it's very and the truth is, it can be this really can be anywhere. Mm-hmm. That no matter what situation you may be in, if you're truly a mensch, people are going to recognize you're a mensch, no matter what it is that you need to do. You may be a mean teacher or a mean principal or a mean whatever or a mean parent, but if you really are a mensch, people recognize that you're a mensch, and that whatever you're still doing is not a contradiction to your menschlichkeit. Okay. The Jewish people are getting ready for Yitzias Mitzrayim, and Hashem gives them the mitzvah of Karban Pesach. So if we take a look at Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Chaf Zayin. And that's on page 356. Actually, take a look at Pasuk Chavav. All the instructions, what the Jewish people need to do that night, are given to them. V'hayok, Pasuk Chavzayin, V'hayok, Yemer Aleichem Aneichem, and it shall be that when your children shall ask you, Ma Avayda Azayis Lachem, what is this service for you? What are you doing? V'amartem, and you shall say, Zevach Pesach Hu LaHashem. This is a Pesach sacrifice to Hashem. Asher Pasach Abate B'nei Yisrael B'Mitzrayim. That he skipped over the houses of the Jewish people in Egypt. V'nat Payas Mitzrayim, when he smote Egypt. V'nat Bateinu Yitzil, and our homes he saved. So you tell your children, this carbon is a Zevach Pesach. It's a carbon Pesach. And it's a carbon Pesach because of the fact that Hashem was Pasach, that Hashem passed over the house of the Jewish people by the sin, by the plague of the smiting of the firstborn, that he skipped over our homes when he was punishing the Egyptians. So I want to share with you a comment from Yaakov Kamenetsky. Yaakov Kamenetsky says the following comment in this Pasuk. It's a very interesting. Idea. The carbon is called the carbon Pesach But in essence, this carbon is could have been called the carbon taida. Could be called the Thanksgiving offering. You know, every time the Torah has a carbon taida, right? It has a Thanksgiving offering. And we know, when do you bring a carbon taida? When you experience a miracle, when you experience a salvation. When Hashem saves you, and you want to express your thanksgiving to Hashem, you bring a carbon called a carbon taida. And in essence, that's really what this carbon could have been called. It could have been called a carbon taida, like eventually there will be such a carbon called a carbon taida. But Hashem said, no, we're not calling it that. We're calling it a carbon Pesach. And the reason is because the Jewish people possibly could have started thinking like typically we do think, and we do ask this question. We always ask a question. Why would the Jewish people, the killing of the firstborn, that was seemingly a plague against the Egyptians. That was a punishment to the Egyptians. Why would that have affected the Jewish people? Why would it be that when Makkas Bechoris is taking place, why would the Jewish people have suffered at the same time? It's a valid question, and there's a lot of discussion about it. The Jewish people could have thought, look, all the miracles that have happened right now, all the plagues that have happened until now, they happened for our benefit, on our behalf. It was about punishing the Egyptians to eventually get us out. It's all about us. And if it's all about us, then that we were saved, that we were saved by Makkas Bechoris, we were saved by Makkas Bechoris. There's no reason why the Makkas should have entered us. All the other Makkas didn't. Everything's been on our behalf. We're the center of the universe right now. Why in the world should we have, why would we consider the idea of thanking Hashem that we were saved? Why would we think otherwise? And therefore, it had to be called the Carbon Pesach. It has to carry the name that says that Hashem skipped over the Jewish people. That you have to always remember, never forget, that the fact that you came out of Egypt alive, the fact that you survived Makkas Bechoris, was the kindness of Hashem. So we have to discuss why they needed that kindness. But at the end of the day, the carbon had to be called a carbon Pesach and not a carbon Taida, because the Jewish people needed a constant reminder of the fact that their ability to survive Makkas Bechoris was not obvious, but rather a kindness of Hashem, and that's what the carbon on Pesach is about. So it carried that name, so that the Jewish people should never make the mistake and wonder and say, what are we doing here? What do we have to thank Hashem for? You have to thank Hashem because Hashem skipped over your houses. You might say, well, you're calling it a carbon taida, you're giving him thanks, you're giving him thanks for it. But Hashem wanted to make it clear. Asher Pasach, remember, Hashem skipped over. He skipped over you. This should have happened to you. It should have happened to you, and it didn't. That was the way that the Jewish people would always be clearly and strongly reminded that they left Egypt through the kindness of Hashem. Now, I want to share with you from the Derech Hashem a very important concept when it comes to the fact that we have a mitzvah to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim, some of the Exodus from Egypt, every day, and especially and on Pesach. In Davening we say, in Ma'ariv we say, Hamaytzi es ama miteicham l'chayris olam. Hashem took out his nation from their midst, l'chayris olam, for eternal freedom. And there's an obvious question. What does eternal freedom mean? We don't have eternal freedom. We've been in Gullus for most of our history. We've been enslaved. We've been subject to foreign nations. What does it mean, chayris olam? What does eternal freedom mean? So the Derech Hashem, and the Derech Hashem is discussing Shema, Kriya Shema that we say every day. He gets to the third paragraph of Shema, and he explains it in the following way, and I'll read it to you from the English translation. Finally, in the last paragraph, which deals primarily with the commandment of Tzitzis, which is the third paragraph of Shema, one recalls the Exodus from Egypt. The reason why this must be recalled daily is because the Exodus was the primary rectification of Israel, whose influence remained with us forever. Yetzias Mitzrayim was a tikkun. It was a tikkun, a rectification for the Jewish people, and that is what remains. That is the eternal freedom. What does that mean? The reason behind this ultimately stems from Adam's sin, Adam Arishan, eating from the Eitz Hadas. When he transgressed, all mankind was degraded, as discussed in the first section. Evil became so strong in man that there was no opportunity for the good to gain any strength. Erech Hashem has a whole discussion that Adam Arishan, that man again, Adam Arishan was created at a very high level. If he would have fulfilled his first mitzvah, he would have reached the highest level. We would have come to the point of what Tchiyas HaMeisim is all about. We would have come to that point right then and there. And the world would have been a whole different world. The world would have continued, the world would have existed, but it would have been at a completely different existence, a different level. Once Adam Arishan ate from the Eitz Hadas and he sinned, man became so corrupt and so polluted with evil. He became a whole different man. And again, how exactly to explain this, it's difficult to do, but just listening to the words, just an idea. Evil became so strong in man, there was no opportunity for the good to gain any strength. Doesn't mean man couldn't do good. But it means that evil was so part of his essence that good was very, very difficult to come by. Even though Abraham was selected so that his children should be set apart from all nations as a people dedicated to God, there was still no opportunity for them to strengthen themselves and establish themselves as a nation. Abraham did accomplish great things. Even though Abraham doesn't have Torah, Abraham didn't have a Tzias Mitzrayim, he definitely raised himself to a very high level through which he merited that he and his progeny will be the special nation of Hashem. But to actually create that special nation, there was no opportunity to do so. Because of the initial pollution and evil that still blackened them, they could not gain possession of their appropriate crown, i.e. as a nation. Now at some point, Hashem decided it can happen as a nation. It was for this reason that Israel had to be exiled and subjugated in Egypt. During this period, they were refined and purified like gold in a smelter. When the proper time came, God increased his influence and illumination over the Jews, repelling the evil and eliminating it from them. That doesn't mean completely. What it means exactly, I don't know, I have to explain it exactly, but we can say it means that the grip of evil upon the Jewish people as human beings was what became much less, became weaker. He then elevated them from their degraded state and lifted them up to him. They were thus permanently redeemed from evil, and were subsequently able to exist as a perfect nation attached to God and ennobled by him. Yetzias Mitzrayim purified them from the evil that contaminated them, that contaminated all of mankind with the sin of Adam Harishon. By going through Mitzrayim, they were now purified. And he says he that elevated them from their degraded state. Whatever the purification process that took place in Mitzrayim, that now allowed them to be elevated and lifted up to him, which means closer to Hashem with a less grip of evil, with less control of evil over them. And subsequently, as he says, were able to exist as a perfect nation. This was a permanent rectification, as already mentioned. And all the good that we attain is a result of it. We are therefore commanded to remember it and recite it verbally each day. The rectification of the Exodus is then strengthened, its light enhanced, and its benefit constantly transmitted to us. When you every day say that last pasuk, Ani Hashem Elokeichem Asher Hoceichi Etchem Eretz Mitzrayim, every day when we fulfill the mitzvah of remembering Yetzias Mitzrayim, remembering Yetzias Mitzrayim strengthens within us that rectification, that tikkun that came to us through Yetzias Mitzrayim. And what was that rectification? The rectification was that the evil that took hold of mankind following the sin of Adam Harishon, that evil we were, I'm going to have to use the word, purified to some degree from that evil, so that now we could become the nation of Hashem, so that now we could receive the Torah and become the nation of Hashem. Of course we still have a Yetzirah, and of course we still can sin, and of course we can make big problems for ourselves, but there is a potential that we have. It's within our nature now, it's within our capacity to be able now to come close to gain the highest closeness to Hashem that humankind can attain. And clearly this is a potential, because later on, when the Derech Hashem talks about mitzvahs, or he calls it mitzvahs hazmanim, they translate it as seasonal commandments, and he talks about chametz and matzah. So let me again, allow me to read you from what he says. The significance of Mas is related to the Exodus from Egypt. Until the Exodus, Israel was assimilated among other peoples, one nation in the midst of another. With the Exodus, they were redeemed and separated. Until that time, every aspect of the human being was darkened by the spiritual opaqueness and pollution that overcame it. With the Exodus, the Jews were set aside so that they would have the opportunity to purify their bodies and prepare themselves for the Torah and for dedication to God. That's what happened. Pesach meant that now we were redeemed, we were freed, we were elevated to prepare ourselves to receive the Torah. In order for this to be possible, they were commanded to rid themselves of chametz and eat matzah. There's some kind of connection. This idea of that now we have the ability to purify ourselves and to prepare ourselves for the giving of the Torah is related to chametz. Bread, which is designated as man's primary food, is appropriate to the state that God desired for man in this world. Leaven is a natural element of bread, making it more digestible and flavorous, thus adding an element of pleasure and desire to its primary purpose of nourishment. Bread has, it's a primary source of nourishment, and it's kashmat, and it's enjoyable. This element feeds the Yetzirah. It feeds the evil urge, which is a necessary component of man in this world. That's a whole different discussion that he has. At a particular determined time, however, Israel was required to abstain from leaven and be nourished by matzah, which is unleavened bread. This reduced the strength of each individual's evil urge and inclination towards the physical, thus enhancing his closeness to the spiritual. That's the point. The point of matzah is, right, when you go to the hotel on Pesach, you're supposed to think, what's the point of this matzah that I'm eating? It's not about all this great stuff that I'm eating at the hotel. It's really about lessening suffering. The physical. It's about lessening the part of our nourishment that feeds the Yetzer Hara. And now, again, as he says, it would be impossible ever for man to constantly nourish himself in this manner, since this is not the state desired for him in this world. A man's state in this world has to be with the Yetzer Hara. This practice is therefore observed only on certain designated days, when he must be on an appropriately higher level. This is the main concept of Pesach as the festival of matzahs. Meaning, as the Derech Hashem says, every Pesach we are preparing for the giving of the Torah. Whenever the seasons of the year, the seasonal Yomim Tovim, are not just historical things that we go through. It's a period. It's a period that we relive. And whatever influences that Hashem sent the first time down when these took place, they repeat themselves. So every Pesach we are preparing ourselves to receive the Torah. And just as the Jewish people had to purify themselves and prepare themselves once they left Egypt, once they gained their eternal freedom from evil, now they have to prepare themselves for receiving the Torah. The way to prepare themselves for receiving the Torah was to make themselves less physical, to make themselves to feed their Yetzer Hara less, to make themselves holier so that they can receive the Torah. And therefore, they were said, only eat matzah, only now nourish yourselves. Don't have the pleasure from the nourishment that you usually have. Have less pleasure, make yourself, feed the Yetzer Hara less, make yourself holier so that you can receive the Torah. So this whole, the Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Tikkun, the rectification of Yetzias Mitzrayim, pretty clearly is a potential. It's a potential that we have. And in essence, it could be an automatic closeness that we have to Hashem. But it's really meant to be a potential that to develop. It's really meant to be a potential to develop to receive the Torah, to live by the Torah, and therefore then to gain that connection and closeness to Hashem. But that's only possible if we have a Tzias Mitzrayim. It's only possible if we have the rectification from evil within us that now we have the capacity to be able to receive the Torah, to live by the Torah, and to be elevated by the Torah. So Yetziat, the eternal freedom that we talk about on in davening is, so to speak, the Jews had to leave Egypt, and they had to get the Egypt out of, and the Egypt had to be taken out of them. The Jews had to be taken out of Egypt, and the Egypt had to be taken out of them. Egypt represented the highest form of evil and physical connection that there was. That had to be taken out of them. But as the Derech Hashem says, that had to be taken out of, that which we had to be taken out of them was something extremely essential to humankind. It all came from the sin of Adam HaRishon. It's that essential pollution that humankind developed because of the sin of Adam HaRishon. And it was Yitzias Mitzrayim that purged us from that evil, or that purged us from that evil to an extent that the grip of evil, the hold of evil, the hold of evil on us, the part that evil is so much a part of us, was diminished, so that now we have the capacity to receive the Torah, to live by the Torah, and to become close to Hashem and to be His special nation.
Something we have to do like every year.
Every year we relive it, correct?
We say, like,